Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So our disagreement with the president is not about closing loopholes. None of us are fond of loopholes. Our disagreement is over the idea of raising taxes on the very people that we're asking to create jobs in our country.
The very people that we're asking to create jobs in our country, House Speaker John Boehner, meaning wealthier Americans. And as the debt ceiling negotiations rage on toward the August 2nd deadline when the United States government could default on its debts, let's focus in on one of the things that was apparently in the deal that almost got struck over the weekend between Boehner and the president and see what you think about it. It's something that you've probably used yourself, and that is tax deductions, not the fancy hedge fund manager tax deductions or corporate jet tax deductions or offshore General Electric putting all its profits in, you know, overseas accounts tax deductions or oil companies getting to depreciate equipment for tax purposes faster than other companies. The Republicans say those are off the table, too, because they're all tax hikes. But no, not those. I mean the basic garden variety tax deductions that are seen as the mom and apple pie of the tax code. The deduction on interest that you pay on your mortgage, the deduction for charitable contributions, the deduction for basic business expenses, and things like that. The question for you today is this: does the current tax deduction formula make sense, or should it be changed to make it fairer and bring in a lot more revenue to pay down the debt? What do you think? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I mentioned yesterday that some number crunching from liberal economist Jared Bernstein is interesting on this regarding how much money they could bring into the government to help pay down the debt by means testing the tax deduction formula. And I'll go over those again because it's potentially a lot of money. It's a big political stumbling block, however, as you just heard from Boehner, and it affects you. So here's how it works. Let's take charitable donations as an example. You already know this if you itemize your deductions. You deduct things at your tax rate. If you have a modest income and pay only the 15% income tax rate, you get 15% of your charitable donations taken off your tax bill. If you make a little more and you're in the 28% income tax bracket, you get 28% off your charity off your tax bill. If you're making $1 million a year, say, and pay the highest 35% income tax rate, the government will pick up the tab for 35% of your charitable donations. And if you're a millionaire, hopefully that's a lot of charity. So the irony is that the richer you are, the higher tax bracket you are in, the more we other Americans subsidize your charitable donations, the interest you pay on your mortgage, and everything else that people deduct. So again, the question for you all today is this: does the current tax deduction formula make sense, or should it be changed to make it what some people see as fairer and bring in a lot more revenue to pay down the debt? 212-433-WNYC. Now, how much would this mean to the national debt? I mentioned the Jared Bernstein estimates, and here they are again. If they limit our tax deductions to 28%, basically as if the wealthiest people were in the 28% bracket rather than the 35, it could bring in $333 billion, according to Bernstein, over 10 years. That's a lot more than chump change. If they took the next step and treated all taxpayers as if we were in the 15% bracket, 15% maximum tax deductions rather than 28 or 35, they would take in a whopping $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. That's about a quarter of all the money they're trying to save. They're trying to trim $4 trillion over the next decade. Just itemizing at 15% would do a quarter of that job, according to Jared Bernstein's number crunching. The rest would mostly be spending cuts: Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, et cetera. So again, the question for you today: does the current tax deduction formula make sense? With me to help take your calls is someone who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, columnist at Reuters, and author of the forthcoming book, The Fine Print: How Big Companies Use Plain English and Other Tricks to Rob You Blind. Hello, David K. Johnston.
Hi. How are you today, Brian?
Good. Welcome to WNYC. Did I get the story about right about how tax deductions work?
Yes. I mean, most of the tax system, because it's a progressive tax system, works on the basis that the larger your income, the greater the benefit you get. The same rule applies to the mortgage deduction. People who make $1 million a year get a larger mortgage deduction than people who make $75,000. And if you make under $50,000, you probably get no value from the mortgage interest deduction on your home.
How much is the idea of flattening the tax deduction curve, the thing I just described, a part of President Obama's debt reduction plan or the plan that he and John Boehner almost agreed to over the weekend?
At the moment, I don't know. I mean, Obama has raised this issue, and Jared is certainly a big advocate of it. It was walked back and away from about as quickly as it was raised originally. And I'm not sure that Jared's analysis at the end of the day will hold up because the tax system does have what are called dynamic effects. Think about it this way. You give up something. And let's deal first with cash. You agree to give on a cash gift somewhere. If the tax rate is 28% and you're in the 35% bracket, the government is taxing you 7% on money that you've completely given away. That's going to encounter an enormous amount of opposition from well-to-do people and from organizations that depend on gifts from well-to-do people.
Suzanne in the Bronx is going to be our first caller because she wants to go all the way. Suzanne, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning. I think every tax deduction needs to be eliminated, and I'm including mortgage, charity, child, state and local tax, all business loopholes. If Congress really thinks that something's worth supporting, they should have to appropriate funds for it openly and defend the decision. I've posted this on your site, but I think every deduction that one person gets means everybody else pays more because the government still has to be funded at whatever level is determined. I think we need a single progressive, and I mean steeply progressive, income tax covering all income. Capital gains, which you don't work for, shouldn't be taxed at lower rates than money you do work for. Now that the Supreme Court thinks corporations are persons with equal free speech rights, they should be taxed at the same rate as persons. And I think all political contributions to from any non-constituent should be barred. Representative government can only function if people who are supposed to be representing us represent us rather than those with deep pockets.
Suzanne, what would your highest tax rate be in your progressive tax system?
I think you have to set it according to what the Congress determines our expenses have to be. But that it should be steeply progressive. I did not vote in what I thought was a progressive administration in order to see them preside over the end of the New Deal.
Suzanne, I'm going to thank you very much for your call. So there is now obviously nobody, including President Obama or probably even the most liberal Democrats in Congress, tell me if I'm wrong, David K. Johnston, is actually advocating going that far. But there certainly is talk about that concept. Scaling tax deductions way back, that the whole thing is too complicated, the whole thing, even home mortgage interest, even charitable donations. It's the government looking at individual things that it wants to promote as social goods and creating financial incentives through the tax code to do that. And some people on various points on the political spectrum do say, let's do away with all of that. Let's just set tax rates at whatever they decide, we decide as a country they should be, and people will pay their taxes.
Well, you're exactly right about this. We have used the tax code, especially in the last 30 years, as a way to finance programs. Instead of approving the money, you approve the tax expenditure, and it's one of the reasons that we have a revenue problem in this country. I was in China 2 weeks ago, Brian, and they have a very simple system there, and the government announced a change in it. Up to so much yuan a month that covers about 85% of the public, you pay no income tax. Above that, it's just a straightforward tax. Pennsylvania has an absolute flat tax of the same kind, but there's no graduated rates to it. And the problem, if you don't have graduated rates, is that if you make $20,000 a year, one more dollar of income is incredibly important to you. If you make $100 million a year, you couldn't find the last dollar if we were going to execute you for failure to find it.
And when you talk about the flat tax, Another argument against this idea of flattening out the deductions comes from conservative economists, which is that Democrats want flat tax deductions, but not a flat tax. You know, they say, let's be consistent. Tax everyone at only 15% and allow deductions at only 15%, but don't tax people at 35% and then tell them they can only deduct up to 15%.
Right. And I want to keep in mind, the flat tax, as it is popularly known, is a tax system under which, for example, Steve Forbes, its major promoter, would never pay taxes again. It is a tax on wages, capital income, interest, dividends, most royalties, capital gains would be tax-free. And so we need to be very clear about that point. The idea of a progressive tax, however, progressive tax rate, is built throughout history. It goes back thousands of years. Adam Smith was in favor. John Locke, in a very mild way, was in favor of it because of this concept of marginal utility, that that extra dollar is less and less valuable the higher your income. There's one other problem with the idea that the caller raised, and that is recognition of income. When you get a paycheck, you recognize income. But if you are a very wealthy person, you can live like the couple that own the Los Angeles Dodgers, the McCourts, an incredible lifestyle while paying no income taxes by simply borrowing against your assets, which may never have been taxed. That's what hedge fund managers can do as well. And so if we want to go to that kind of a system, we have to look at the rules on when and how income is recognized. Otherwise, wealthy people will just borrow against their assets and never pay taxes.
Scott in Soho. Hi, Scott. You're on WNYC. Scott, you there? Scott hung up. Let's go to Peter in Armonk. You're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you? I'm a small business owner and have been one for 35 years, employed between 85 and 110 people at various points in time. And I never understood why some of the deductions that I was allowed to take, but I was. I take a customer to play golf, I get a 50% deduction. And, you know, the number of deductions as a business person that I can take compared to an individual or an individual wage earner is just, to me, extraordinary. I also just want to say that during all those years when I was, I guess, a so-called job creator, I never once considered taxes or the tax rate in a decision to hire or fire one person.
Do you think
we either had so much business that we needed more employees to do the business, or we didn't have enough business and we needed to make cutbacks or cut back through attrition? But I never said, "Oh my God, taxes are going up. I'm going to fire people. Or I'm not going to hire people." Never.
David K. Johnston, do you think that's very common?
Oh, I think it's incredibly common. And, you know, I'm chairman of the board of a little company with 25 workers. I agree exactly. We hire more workers when we have demand for our services, and that's the only reason that we do so. And every business person I know operates on a different theory than you're hearing from people on Capitol Hill. You need customers, you have customers, you need work done, you hire people. You don't make these decisions based on taxes. This disconnect is quite important. And in addition, the caller is exactly right. When you have a business, you can live off that business and everything becomes tax deductible. You want to take a trip to the Caribbean? Well, you're going down to meet with clients or inspect some technology or whatever, and it's now a tax deductible trip, whereas everybody else has to do it out of their after-tax dollars.
And I might add, if I may, that if your accountant tells you you're going to have a tax bill of X, you can increase your contribution to a defined benefit plan and bring that tax almost down to zero.
Exactly right. And that's, in fact, why most small businesses don't pay any tax. The one year that we had a large unexpected profit in our business, we took the $20,000 and bought a piece of equipment, which has since earned us many times over what it cost. But we didn't pay any taxes.
Thank you for your call, Peter. On Facebook, we asked which tax deductions people think make sense and which don't. Julie wrote, mortgage deduction on a primary residence is a keeper. David wrote, the mortgage deduction on a primary residence is not worth keeping. People buy more house than they can afford, and it distorts the housing market. I would not recommend eliminating it in one fell swoop. A gradual elimination is a much better plan. So, David,
well, you know, In Canada, Brian, they don't have a mortgage interest deduction, and their home occupancy rate is just about the same as ours. This is an upside-down subsidy that benefits high-income people. I agree that to just cold turkey stop it would be very disruptive, but even the National Association of Realtors has acknowledged that for high-end homes, $250,000 and up, a third of the price people pay is the tax deduction. It distorts housing prices, and it does not encourage home ownership.
But if we change the formula, that could depress the housing market even more than it is today, because with less of a mortgage interest deduction, people could afford less of a home. And then it could also depress charitable giving, because with less of a deduction, wealthier people who have the most to give would cut back. Are those not true arguments?
Transitions are a real problem. No matter what you're doing, you know, it's like building a new highway. Getting in, when you get the new highway, it's great. But going from the old one to the new one, remember the Gowanus? Is a real tough thing to do. But we can do that by freezing the current system, saying to anybody, if you get a mortgage by date X, you can opt for the current rules, and then transiting out of that over time. You have to have some political will to do it and a recognition that the system is wasteful and encourages overinvestment in unproductive assets, which is a large part of our overall problem, Brian. We've created a tax code that encourages excessive investment in unproductive assets.
Jack in Long Branch. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jack.
I just want to agree with your guest's last statement that we're investing in unproductive ventures that the private market had no interest in. Why would the public field want to do that? But the point I called on was this idea that we need to progressively tax the rich because they need to pay more. And the reality is they already do pay more. They pay much more than other nations of the world. They donate charitably, and the question, have you ever worked for a poor person? Because when you don't take these people's money, they're going to invest it, and they're going to create jobs, which is exactly what we need at the moment.
David K. Johnston?
Well, this is a very widely held belief, and I'll be blunt about it. It's nonsense. And let me explain the reasoning of it. First of all, it was the invention of the moral basis for progressive taxation that gave birth to democracy, and that is, if you live in the jungle in man's natural state, you can't have any assets because thugs will take them from you. It is civilization that makes wealth possible. All private wealth is built on a foundation of common wealth, which is to say it is built on a foundation of taxes. Those people who manage to become very wealthy through their good luck, through hard work, lots of different ways people become wealthy. Money is not connected to virtue. Are returning to the society that which made it possible for them to become wealthy. That was one of the great insights of the Greeks that put us on the road to self-governance. Having lots of money doesn't mean you create jobs. Lots and lots of people have money and are not job creators at all. Corporate America right now is sitting on a record $2 trillion of cash in round numbers. That's about $7,000 per American, and they're not creating jobs. And in many cases where they are creating jobs, they're destroying the job here and creating it overseas, because our tax rules and our regulation rules tell businesses to do that.
But I want to make sure that we answer the caller's question, which is against the idea of the progressive tax. And I think the job creation incentive was not his only point. I think he sees it as fundamentally unfair. If you're making so much money, you're already going to pay a lot more if there's a flat tax. Forget about the part, you know, that you brought up before regarding how investment income would be taxed at zero under the Steve Forbes plan. Let's assume for the moment that all income, no matter how it was derived, was taxed at one flat rate. Let's say it was 25%. So if you make $100,000 a year, you're going to pay $25,000 a year in taxes. If you make $1 million a year, you're going to pay $250,000 in taxes. So even with a so-called flat tax, it's hardly like that wealthier person is getting off easier.
Actually, they are getting off much easier, Brian, because of this fundamental economic concept of marginal utility. The person who pays $250,000 still has $750,000, or 10 times the income of the person who makes $75,000. And people who are very wealthy benefit from the public investment. You know, Conrad Hilton in his will talked about how it was peace and highways and that made it possible for him to make all this money off of the hotel business. What you're doing with a progressive tax, and every classic worldly economist for 2,500 years has supported progressive taxation. Even George W. Bush said he was in favor of progressive taxation. What you are doing is you are harvesting your winners. All societies will produce people who are tax eaters because they're ill, because they don't function well, because they run into an accident. And the only way you can finance a society is by recognizing that those people who are your winners, you need to harvest the same way you do harvesting your investments if you want to have a sound economy.
Talking about tax deductions and whether they should change to help close the federal deficit and debt with David K. Johnston from Reuters. Brian on Facebook writes, "This isn't a deduction issue, but as an atheist, I cannot stand that religious organizations are tax exempt." Carolita on our Facebook page writes, "Charitable doesn't make sense, but I guess rich people won't be charitable unless it's deductible, which is why it should stay. Personally," she writes, "I feel charity should be without personal benefits other than your own conscience." How about the stats on that, David, as far as we know? Do people give a lot more to charity because it's tax deductible?
Well, the most generous people in America are low-income Americans who give to their religious organizations, and you can make an argument that that's their social life in the same way that people who give to the Metropolitan Opera or the Metropolitan Museum built their social life around where they donate money.
When you say the most generous people in America are low-income Americans who give to their religious organization,
right,
most generous in terms of percentage of what they take in?
The percentage of their income that they give away. The least generous Americans are the upper middle class, who tend to give away between 1% and sometimes in good years 2%. At the high end, you have a lot of giving, but it's highly, highly concentrated. And what often happens is someone who has spent a lifetime building up a business, at the point that they sell it, they will fund their lifetime charitable giving because of the tax benefit they get at the time. I think the real question we need to ask about charitable giving is how so much of it goes to benefit well-to-do people. You know, Grambling State and the historic black colleges in the South have very, very tiny endowments, but Harvard has tens of billions of dollars in its endowment, and it's still charging top tuition rates. And I think that's what Congress needs to look at, is what qualifies to be a charitable gift.
Mark on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Great show. Mr. Johnston, you are an amazing writer. I've been following you running for well too long, and I hope to continue. Isn't part of the problem the fact that all these laws are written in Congress, and the Ways and Means Committee, I think, is the main organ of that, and there seems to be no accountability, even amongst a tried-and-true liberal guy like, say, Charlie Rangel? How many of these loophole things were written during the last 5 years, 10 years, and how does it become possible to counteract those? It seems every time they try to do something, it makes things even worse.
Yeah, the whole writing of tax law is done in secret. It's done in the middle of the night. There's no accountability to who it is. There are giveaways that are targeted to various groups that you couldn't even tell if you were reading the tax code, because you would have to put together something in this statute and something in that statute and something somewhere else to recognize one person gets a benefit from it. And the biggest reform we could have is requiring that all tax law changes have a congressman's name on them, be subject to a public hearing, and they be introduced and identified if there are fewer than, say, 1,000 beneficiaries.
Mark, thank you. And as we run out of time, maybe that last call gives me a chance to plug your forthcoming book and ask you how much of what we've been talking about today relates to it, and we'll invite you back for a proper book interview. But I see that the book title is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English and Other Tricks to Rob You Blind. Does it have anything to do with how the tax code gets written?
Parts of it are tax, Brian. It's the third in this series, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, The Fine Print. But much more, The Fine Print is about prices and restraining competition and the ways that businesses artificially push up prices so that you pay 4, 6, 8, in one case 38 times what people in other countries pay for the same goods and services.
David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, columnist at Reuters, as we talk about what the tax deduction rates should be in light of the federal debt. Thank you very much for joining us. Still to come this hour, why the U.S. Embassy in Syria was attacked, apparently with government permission, their government encouraging people or allowing people to attack our embassy. Is that what it's coming to now in Syria? And after Derek Jeter's 3,000th hit, we will ask, because he is it for some, who is your favorite athlete ever? As a fan, any athlete, any sport, coming up.